This is State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. I'm Jennifer Guerra. This hour, we're digging into the question of why so many babies in Michigan die before their first birthday and what's being done to try to change that.
Hey, Melissa, are you going to come let us in? Okay, thanks. They don't have doorbells here, so I have to call her and have her come open the door.
I'm with Jenny Hall. She's a social worker in Genesee County, and she let me tag along with her on a home visit to see a client of hers who lives near Flint. The client is named Melissa. Like a lot of Hall's clients, Melissa is on Medicaid and receives federal and state aid.
She's 18 and has three small children, and we're going to go meet with her and see how she's doing as far as coping and what her goals are, what she's working on today.
Hall visits Melissa usually three or four times a month. The home visits are part of Healthy Start, a program designed to reduce infant mortality disparities in places with some of the worst birth outcomes. You know those forms you have to fill out, the ones that say, in case of emergency, who should we contact? Well, for a lot of Jenny Hall's clients, Jenny is their main support system. She's the one they call if they're in trouble. Melissa, no exception. Before we go in to meet Melissa, I asked Hall if she thinks what she's doing is making a difference in Melissa's life.
Well, at first it doesn't feel like it when you say, oh, she has three kids under the age of 18. But it is working. It really is. It is a long process for these girls to get out of the cycle they've been in for so long. So we consider the fact that her children are healthy, she's on birth control, she hasn't, you know, slipped into the negative mentality that she wants to stay on state aid. She will say, I'm not going to be like my family. I'm going to be the one to get out. I'm going to be able to support my kids someday. So in short term, it might not look like there's been a lot of change, but in her mind, her mindset, she's getting out of the cycle.
You're very invested.
I am.
Yeah.
You can really just see if you took a child and put them in your family, you know, versus how they've lived, just the outcome would be so much different. So we're just trying to give them the chance to have a positive outcome.
To help women like Melissa break out of the cycle of poverty and help their infants thrive, Healthy Start takes a holistic approach. I like to think of it as the Infant Mortality Reduction Dream Team. There's a nutritionist, a nurse, a social worker, and a community health worker. Together, they assess the needs of the mom and from there decide who should do the home visits. There is no cap on the number of home visits, so up until the baby turns two, members of the Dream Team can visit clients every day if that's what's needed. During that time, social worker Jenny Hall and her colleagues, they try to help the women finish their education, get stable housing, and perhaps equally as important, they give the women a safe place to vent.
All right, so what's new?
On this particular home visit, Hall and Melissa talk about everything from housekeeping to how her two-month-old is doing.
Well, he got the sniffles right now, but he was breaking out real bad and he was constipated.
They talk about how Melissa can't afford daycare, and so she isn't sure when she'll be able to go back to school to get her GED. They talk about the projects where Melissa used to live and where most of her family still does.
There's at least a shooting every week there. It's not very safe. We're there.
As she burps her little baby boy, Melissa tells Hall that she found out two of her friends from her old neighborhood just died.
They both got shot, and I didn't even know it.
Well, I'm glad you're out here where it's safe.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, keep us out of harm's way, especially my kids, because I don't know what I'd do if something happens to them. I love them so much.
The funding for Healthy Start is a combination of state Medicaid dollars and a $750,000 federal grant. There are six Healthy Start programs in Michigan, with more on the way. Most are focused on African American mothers and their children, but one program focuses on Michigan's Native American population. The Healthy Start program in Genesee County began over 10 years ago, when the African American infant mortality rate there was nearly four times higher than the rate for white babies. According to their most recent data, the black infant mortality rate for Healthy Start babies in Genesee County is zero. Zero babies from the program died before their first birthday. And they don't cherry-pick ideal candidates to be in the program. The higher the need, the better. One community health worker I spoke to says she recruits women in line at Walmart. Over at a church in southwest Detroit, one group is using an old-fashioned baby shower to try to get women in the neighborhood to sign up for a new infant mortality reduction program. And what baby shower would be complete without baby shower games? At this one, three dozen moms play the purse game. You know the one? Somebody calls out a bunch of different items, and whoever has the most items on the list wins. The winner in this case gets to choose one of the baskets at the front of the room. The baskets are filled with diapers, onesies, stuffed animals. There are big ticket items too, like a diaper genie and a bassinet. Taped to each prize is a piece of paper that says, "Sew up the safety net" on the front. Sew Up the Safety Net is a collaboration between four Detroit area health systems, and it's funded by a $1.8 million grant. Dr. Kimberly Dawn Wisdom with Henry Ford Hospital is spearheading the program. Now, it's pretty early in the game. They just started recruiting women. The goal is to sign up 1,500 at-risk women from three Detroit neighborhoods. The vast majority of the women will not be pregnant. The idea is to help the women long before they get pregnant so that they can improve their chances of having a healthy baby.
We know that a woman has to be healthy prior to her pregnancy, ideally. So having access to fresh fruits and vegetables and safe environments to exercise, a controlled blood pressure, a weight that is a healthy weight. Also, a mother that does not have a 12th grade education is also a contributing factor to a poor birth outcome and ultimately an infant death as well.
Sew Up the Safety Net uses something called a community health worker model. Community health workers are people on the front lines. They live in the neighborhoods where they work. So for Sew Up the Safety Net, each targeted neighborhood will have two community health workers. Wisdom calls them neighborhood navigators. The navigators will visit the women at their homes and talk with them about nutrition, education, health and wellness, family planning, and they'll serve as a link between the women and the various resources available to them, both social and medical. By addressing not just what happens inside the hospitals, but in the neighborhoods as well, Wisdom thinks they can start to move the needle on infant mortality and improve the health of the whole community while they're at it.
So, for instance, to address infant mortality, you provide the ability for women to have access to fresh fruits and vegetables in their neighborhood. Well, guess what? Other people in the neighborhood are going to benefit from access to fresh fruits and vegetables. If you have a safe environment where they can, you know, move more, if you have better access to transportation for the women that are pregnant through bus lines and that sort of thing, the whole community benefits. All of these different things, factors that we use that will help decrease the infant mortality rate are the same factors that will actually lift the whole a whole community in terms of its health status.
The 1,500 women who will participate in Sew Up the Safety Net will be tracked over the next 3 years to see, one, if the community health worker approach works, and two, if it can be replicated. You're listening to State of Opportunity. This hour, we're looking at why infant mortality is such a problem in the state and what's being done about it. I'm Jennifer Guerra. Infant mortality and infant mortality disparities aren't just a problem in Michigan. They're a problem across the country. That's why the Obama administration is coming up with a federal plan to reduce infant mortality nationwide. Kay Johnson is the woman who's heading up the advisory committee for the plan. She says the Affordable Care Act will play a big role. Right now, if you're poor and you're pregnant, you're likely covered by Medicaid. But if you're a low-income woman and you're not pregnant, chances are you don't qualify for Medicaid and you can't afford health insurance on your own.
4 out of 10 low-income women with incomes below 200% of poverty do not have health insurance. 4 out of 10 of them. How can we help women become healthy and come to a pregnancy ready with their own health and well-being that they can give to that pregnancy and to that baby if we're not helping them get preventive care or address their diabetes? So we've failed to invest in women before pregnancy, and it's a big gap in our country.
That is, until now. Kay Johnson says the Affordable Care Act now gives low-income women of childbearing age the opportunity to get well women visits and screenings and preventative services that might stave off chronic conditions like hypertension and diabetes, conditions that are known to lead to preterm and low birth weight babies. Better access to contraception is also part of the health care reform law. If Michigan goes through with its Medicaid expansion as it's written in the Affordable Care Act, some 400,000 to 500,000 people in Michigan who did not qualify before will now have health insurance. Educating parents on safe sleep environments is something Kate Johnson, nearly everybody I spoke to, brought up as something parents can actively do to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome and other sleep-related causes of infant death. The Back to Sleep campaign has been around since the early 90s, and yet nearly a third of all infant deaths in this country are due to SIDS. So there are people like Nurse Amy Candace,
K-A-N-D-E-S,
who check in on moms at their homes right after they've had their baby.
All right, couple questions.
On a recent home visit to a family in southwest Detroit, Candace checks the newborn's weight and color and walks the new parents through what is normal and what is not in terms of the baby's health. She talks with them about feeding, how they're not supposed to heat up infant formula in the microwave, how you can still get pregnant when you're breastfeeding.
You can still get pregnant.
Uh-oh.
Then you have 9 months and a new baby, so be careful.
And then she goes into her SIDS talk.
And then this one is muy importante. This one is dormir boca arriba. This is back to sleep or prevención muerte de cuna.
She explains that tummy time is good, but only when a parent is watching. And that cute little baby hat, that's a no-no. It can fall over the baby's face and suffocate her.
Okay. Nothing in her crib. Nothing. Only the baby. No diapers, no pillows, no bumper pads. These have to come out.
Candace is with the Bright Beginnings program out of the Henry Ford Health System, which some Medicaid providers cover. It's one of the many, many nurse home visiting programs available to women in the state, whether you're a new mom or this is your fifth baby, whether or not you qualify for Medicaid. Another thing you can do to improve your baby's chance of survival? Not smoking during pregnancy is probably the number one preventable risk factor for poor birth outcomes. And yet, in Michigan, about 15% of moms smoke during pregnancy. University of Michigan researcher Katie Gold isn't surprised that women continue to smoke during their pregnancy.
I have had patients on cocaine and smoking, and every single one of them has said to me, oh, cocaine was much easier to quit than tobacco smoking.
What she is surprised about is how many women don't tell their doctors and midwives that they smoke. Studies show about a third of women on Medicaid don't admit to their doctors that they smoke, which means those pregnant moms don't get the counseling to try to stop smoking. So Goal did some focus groups with a bunch of moms who are or were smokers and asked them,
why do women not disclose this? What are they worried about? In general, these women said people should tell their doctors because doctors or midwives could help them quit smoking. They wanted that help, but they were very afraid of the judgment. And they talked about how women look at a pregnant woman as a smoker and think badly of her and think she doesn't care about her child.
Gold says there's a urine test people can take that shows whether or not someone is smoking, regardless of what they may say. So Gold asked the women in her focus group,
what if you had told your doctor you didn't smoke? And then the doctor presented you with something that showed you had a positive test. And the women felt like it might actually open up an opportunity to talk about it. That for some people, it might open the door.
And for others, it might not. Gold says the doctors and midwives she surveyed were not fans of the idea. Even though Gold said if she did the study, she would tell the women what she was testing for, the doctors and midwives said no, it would violate the patient's trust.
I think it still, in my mind, raises this concern that we're not counseling 30% of women who tell us they're not smoking when they are. And that's not doing a favor to their fetus in the growing pregnancy.
Gold is still sifting through transcripts from the focus groups, so she's not quite clear what her next steps are and whether or not she'll move forward with a clinical trial in the future. When it comes to breastfeeding, the Centers for Disease Control recommends all babies in the U.S. be breastfed exclusively for 6 months or longer. Now, that's a pretty tall order, considering the CDC says just over 10% of babies in the U.S. are exclusively breastfed at 6 months. And the rates are particularly low for African-American babies.
Well, most people around my age and younger, they feel like it's nasty. Like, I guess they associate it with, like, sexual, you know. So they just think, like, you know, no, that's what your man's supposed to do or something. So they're weird.
25-year-old Daisha Flewellen is one African-American mom who is bucking the trend. She breastfed her two oldest children until they were 18 months old, and she's currently breastfeeding her littlest one, four-week-old Sincere.
I'm going to try to go 2 years with this one. And I like the bonding time. I like all the nutrients that they get from it.
Flewellen is enrolled in a breastfeeding support group for Medicaid patients at St. John Hospital and Medical Center in Detroit. The group gets together at the hospital every Tuesday. Dr. Paula Schreck runs the breastfeeding support group. She sees breast milk as the ultimate preventative medicine.
If you're talking about poverty, if you're talking about improving the health of a population, where best to start than hour one of life, providing optimal nutrition that's free?
Breastfeeding is a personal choice, of course, and there are a host of reasons why some women don't breastfeed. But studies have shown lots of health benefits associated with breastfeeding. It helps protect babies from infection. Breastfed babies are less likely to develop asthma or become obese. It's even been shown to reduce the risk of SIDS.
The effect on health, it doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. You can still access the same quality food. And that's a beautiful thing.
Breast milk is free, but Schreck's support group isn't. It's grant-funded. So are the countless other initiatives and programs we've talked about this hour. Saving babies' lives costs money. It isn't free, and there's clearly no silver bullet. But many of the researchers and public health workers I talk to believe we can start to make a difference by focusing not just on what happens in the doctor's office or in the hospital, but what happens in the communities where women and their children live. Dr. Renee Kennedy from the Ingham County Health Department says she'll continue to look for solutions, not just for herself, but for the son she lost many years ago.
Every study you read about, every story you hear about, is not just a, wow, how terrible, but no, that's my neighbor, and that's my friend, and that's my coworker. And if we retain nothing as a society, it is a sense of compassion and connectedness that I think will propel us to solutions. And it's my hope to be looking back one day, long after a retirement, sitting back at 94, saying, wow, infant mortality just rarely happens. We finally figured it out.
You've been listening to State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. This documentary was informed by the Public Insight Network. Thanks to Dustin Dwyer, Sarah Alvarez, and Jordan Medina. Vincent Duffy was our editor. Tamar Charney is the executive producer of State of Opportunity. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Jennifer Guerra.
Support for State of Opportunity comes from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.